Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. How are you all getting on? Hope you're fine this Monday morning. And nice and busy on the phone lines as well, which is always good because it means you're listening. Hi, Greg. Could you ask about the NTPF regarding being referred by your doctor for a procedure to be done and being sent to Knightsbridge in Ballykelly? With the NTPF, it says on the letter, will be of no cost to you, but I'm afraid after I receive the treatment, I'll be sent a bill for the procedure. We'll just double-check everything. I think sometimes people get caught out with what you're entitled for the refund. Also, to... there's a code I think you're given for the operation, and make sure that code matches what's on the NTPF forms, if that makes sense. Maybe it's something that we should, now that we're assured that the system will be, that the system is being refined somewhat, maybe it would be worthwhile for you out there for us to get an expert on to talk about the NTPF system sort of from start to finish. So how long do you have to be on a waiting list, if at all? Can you be referred straight away? You know, how much will it actually cost? How much do you expect to be refunded? And what are the pitfalls? I think that might be helpful to a lot of people out there. So maybe that's something we might work on. I got €25 back from a claim for €180 from the HSC, and my claim was genuine. Morning, Greg. Re-hedge cutting. There is so much of this going on through the county. I don't mind the hedge cutting, but what annoys me is the way they leave the main roads. Don't even clean them up. Plus the fact they even have to cut hedges on a Sunday, which I think is ridiculous. Would like someone in this business to answer the question why they don't clean up after themselves. I'm not really quite sure of the answer to that. Morning. Sent away from a driving licence last January. Sent to Medical One. Can't get any word from them. What do I do to get my licence? That comes in from James. Okay, I don't understand the question, but James, someone out there will. Sent away for the driving licence in January. Sent to Medical One. Reg, can't get any word from them. What do I do to get my licence? So someone out there understands what that is. Help me, please, and we can pass that information on to James. Good morning, Greg. People who smoke will pay anything for a cigarette, and these advocates know that. They want people to quit, so why don't they just ban them? They won't, because they make too much tax. Putting the price up is only to keep the tax amount steady. This isn't for health. If it was, they would be banned, not priced up. The government and advocacy groups working together to rip people off. Do this group get government funding? I know there are some groups that advocate on behalf of smokers. They're funded by the tobacco industry. But a caller says, should be €20 for a vape cartridge as well. Ban the vaping, says that listener. It's great that there's a greater cooperation between Ulster universities and the Republic, says the listener. My own son went to Coleraine, but students going to Ulster have to pay full fees. Currently, £4,700 as opposed to Irish students' registration fee of £3,000, and cannot avail of government subsidies like the £500 rent rebate. That is an issue I wanted to work with the minister, but I proposed it incorrectly by focusing on the Susie grants. My apologies. I had an opportunity there, and unfortunately, I got the information caught up in my head. But we will try and get some clarity on that down the line. Okay, we got that one there a little earlier on. Question for the minister. What about cross-border workers? They can't access social supports this side of the border. Hammered all the time. I'm not sure that's for his department, but certainly one we can chase up with the responsible minister next time we have access to them. You can get part of the SUSI, but they won't pay the fees part, so it will cost you £4,000 for fees. Again, really missed a trick there. My apologies on that. Can you read this out, please? My daughter was granted SUSI and her grant was cut in half, which works out at €41 per week due to her workplace meant being only a few miles from her home. How unfair can this be? It's hard enough to manage. Our daughter is studying in Maynooth University. She applied for the SUSI grant after endless back and forth of the team asking for more information on the application. She was refused because we were €6 over the recommended budget, and she won't get the grant because of this. Over €6. This is an absolute disgrace. She travels from Dublin, Donegal to Maynooth weekly. Rents, need to buy her weekly shop. It's an absolute disgrace just being €6 over the limit. I take it you appealed, did you? If you did, just confirm that for us. That is just devastating. As well as people leaving college, many are being pushed out because they do placement and the inspector knocks them down. My daughter has passed all her written exams and passed them very well. She has a difficulty in pronouncing all her written exams. She has a difficulty in pronouncing words and hence is failed. because she has been so used to speaking Irish all of her life and takes her time to think of the word in English. She hasn't appealed it because she was told there is no appealing. Now she has to pay €1,800 and repeat the year. And despite going to the students' union, this is the only option she's being given. She was in a five-year programme with 3 years done. Now she's left depressed and heading abroad. My daughter never worked, would have worked abroad. She's one of the few nurses who would have stayed in this country. I mean, obviously, her first language is Irish. She's difficulty in pronouncing words. I presume she's sort of translating them on the foot. I don't really get the full situation there. On the reading of it, it sounds incredibly wrong. Good morning, Greg. Just a quick message to say a huge thank you and well done to the Highland Radio sports team. In particular, it was a bumper weekend of Gaelic football and your sports team covered all the games really well. Thanks again. Lovely. Thanks for the feedback. I'll pass that on to the guys. They did well. I was listening to much of it. Brendan Devaney is going to be up after 11, by the way, to review the weekend's GEA action, preview the podcast, the DL Debate podcast. If you have a question or comment for Brendan, get in touch with us now on the usual numbers, 086 60 25000. How disrespectful of Met Aaron to change the storm name Kieran just because the Netherlands forecasters are too lazy to learn the pronunciation of it. It is our country's native language. We should be proud of this. The Irish language is fading away, and such a shame. Other countries wouldn't do this. I'm shocked and disappointed by Met Aaron to allow this. I'd be intrigued to hear their response. I don't get it. Like, Kieran is not like, you know, there are Kiva, for an example, is a lovely name. But, you know, to look at it, you might struggle, or Cliona in Irish is a difficult name to pronounce if you look at it, the spelling of it. Kieran, not so. Kieran. Kieran? I mean, how could you mess it up? And also, we have lots of different names nowadays in Ireland, in Netherlands, in different countries. You just have to learn people's names. It's a thing of respect. Lots and lots of people have very different names now. I know that from we are a country now where people have different names from all over the world. So that is a load of nonsense. And I think they should learn the very simple pronunciation of Kieran. A few people looking for the contact details for the Ombudsman. The telephone number, if you've got a pen handy, 01-639-5600. You can call us. You have our number in your head, don't you? The Twitter, at Office Ombudsman, or the website, ombudsman.ie. Okie doke, Mark joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right, Mark. You were recently looking to travel using Bus Éireann. What was your experience, please?
Unfortunately, I had booked to travel with Bus Éireann from Dublin Airport back down to Letterkenny Bus Station.
Yeah.
When the bus arrived in Bus Éireann on last Monday there, I was told that that I was booked on from Bus Éireann and that the bus wasn't wheelchair accessible.
Okay.
I then obviously I had the confirmation text to show that I was already booked on.
Mm.
So I showed the bus driver the message, and he goes, "Oh, that's our mistake. We'll send out a replacement bus." That caused initially a 20-minute delay for all the passengers.
Wow.
After that, then, the replacement bus eventually arrived. So tried to get on, and the lift wasn't working. That meant that I was stuck in Dublin Airport until 3:05 on Monday afternoon. Mm. I arrived in Dublin Airport at 10:30, so it was a long wait.
And the bus obviously departed with the rest of the passengers without you, and you were left sat in the airport yourself. Did they apologise? Did they offer to compensate you? What did they say to you, Mark, about your delay?
They apologised and just said that the bus wasn't accessible, but I don't understand how every bus in this day and age can't be wheelchair accessible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2023. Like, can they not have one space in every bus that is accessible?
Especially the newer buses. I mean, obviously, are they going to retrofit buses? Possibly not. But every new bus should have a fully functioning working lift with at least one space. I mean, as you say, it's 2023.
Exactly. That was the point I was making. Like, you can understand the older buses, but for the likes of travel to Dublin, like, Well, what happens if I have an emergency appointment or something that I need to travel with?
Yeah, and also you had this, I mean, obviously this is emergency or short notice situations. You had this booked quite some time in advance, didn't you?
Unfortunately, to travel with the wheelchair, you need to book 48 hours in advance.
Mm.
But I had it booked 2 months in advance.
Wow.
As soon as I booked my flights, I also booked the bus just to guarantee it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really, really unfair and humiliating too that the bus sails away. You're stuck there on your own. Two buses arrived. I mean, it must have been an embarrassing situation for you, Mark, you know, worried that you're delaying other people and stuff, you know, as well as just wanting to get home.
Obviously, there were passengers already loaded onto the bus because the bus came from Bus Harris, and they all had to get off the bus because they thought they were getting a replacement bus. And I felt like that they were all looking at me and blaming me because I know myself, subconsciously you would do it to somebody else that they were delaying you. Like,
have you had problems like this in the past? Like, normally, what's your experience with Bus Éireann like in terms of getting a wheelchair accessible bus, Mark?
Usually it's okay. I would do it quite regularly. The Dublin service, but the last time I was travelling as well, the emergency door broke on the bus, which also stranded me for 4 hours in Bus Harris.
Mm. Well, Bus Éireann, we were on to them and they've explained it. It's kind of a long-winded response, but they also say in it that the customer care team is going to be in contact with you to offer you a discount or concessions for future travel. I'm not sure if that will... I think you're more or less trying to hope this is avoided into the future for either yourself or other people. But anyway, it says, Bus Éireann sincerely apologises for the undue inconvenience caused to this customer. Unfortunately, despite the customer booking in advance as required, an incorrect vehicle type assigned to the route, meaning they could not be accommodated at 1:20 as planned. The customer was accommodated on the next suitable service at 3:05. This was due to an error in our own internal communication, and the matter is being investigated to ensure it does not reoccur. We're pleased that the customer's initial journey to Dublin Airport on our service was accommodated, and hope the customer continues to travel with Bus Éireann into the future. And then they say, we spoke to Mark on the day to apologise and ensure he was accommodated on the next available service. As part of our follow-up procedures, we'll be contacting again to offer a discount and concession. And it goes on to say that they're committed to the provision of a fully accessible public transport system by 2030. Right, so that's their response. They're going to contact you. They say they have a 91% customer satisfaction level, but they've got an almost 10% dissatisfaction level. So hopefully they can reduce that, Mark. And hopefully you don't experience something like this again. But they say they will be in contact with you again on the matter.
The other problem I just had, just briefly, Greg.
No, it's no panic. Take your time, Mark.
If I was to travel, just say, like, I have an emergency appointment in Dublin tomorrow.
Yes.
I can't travel on Bus Éireann tomorrow with the wheelchair.
Yeah, you have to give 48 hours notice. So what do you do if you've no one in your... you know, I mean, what do you do in a situation like that?
That's the problem that I'm trying to raise here.
Yeah.
I'd be stranded because obviously I don't drive. My mother and father are working. How do I get to Dublin?
What do you think would be...
I'm unable, but...
What do you think would be reasonable? Like 12 hours notice or... I mean, because... Even if every bus had one wheelchair space available, Mark, it could be possible that you could arrive at the bus and someone else has already taken that space. So I presume there has to be some sort of a booking system. But what do you think would be fair and inclusive and realistic?
I'm not actually sure. I haven't fully thought about that, but it's just something that came into my head while I was waiting on the bus as to the fact, what happens if this was an emergency?
Mm-hmm.
The other point was that they've offered concessions, and I luckily have free travel.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah, well, it's not much use to you, so, of course. Yeah.
The concessions isn't like I wasn't out of pocket.
Just caller wants to know, Mark. Currently, can you book your tickets for the bus online?
I usually just ring up to the office, but I think it is possible to book online.
Okay.
At a charge of €2.
Lovely. There's your free travel for you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Mark, well, listen, they've responded. They say they're going to try and ensure it doesn't happen again. And maybe they'll come up with something else when they contact you after. But I think it's something we really need to look at. It's something we've covered on this program and will continue to do so, Mark. We need a 48 hours notice. That doesn't help with emergency appointments and what have you. But thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Chris.
All right, Mark, take care of yourself. That's listener Mark there and his experience. Okay. A caller says his wife is at €13,000 paying for ongoing procedures in the north with the cross-border scheme going back months and months. She's been asked to provide bank statements amongst other paperwork, which she has, but has not received a penny back. Again, the Ombudsman's Office, I would involve them. It's something that Ger and his team seem really focused on, and they have a good relationship with the head of the HSE there. Another caller had his procedure in June 2020 costing €5,000 and was initially declined any money back as he went to Outlegelvin Hospital. It was never outlined to him that he had to go to a private hospital in order to avail of the scheme. The case is ongoing. Now, I would have probably presumed that it would have to have been a private hospital, but if it's not made clear and it's not something I've been through... It's interesting that HSE requires a printed bank statement as proof of payment for a procedure, particularly when the Department of Social Protection is accepting photocopies of passports as proof of identity to issue PPS numbers to asylum seekers. The passport details aren't verified with the relevant national authorities in almost all cases due to time differences or claims by the asylum seeker that they're being persecuted by their own authorities. No check is done with Interpol either. The system is open to abuse. That is a listener. It's obviously... heard that information somewhere or done their research on that. Can I mention a couple of scams going about? Because they're quite tricky. They're quite good. And I don't mean that in any way to credit them, but I can check my spam folder. Let's see here. A customs charge is owed for your on-post delivery. You need to pay $2.70 for your package. Please follow the link. And it's onpost.unpaid.tax.info. That is a scam. Never click a link in a text, please. Never, ever, ever click a link. That's the golden rule with all of these scams. But if you are waiting on an on-post delivery, you could get caught out. But just don't click a link in a text message or an email because it'll be a problem. If you have any concerns, you ring on-post and say, I got this text, but just don't click the link. And there's three or four of them that I've received over the last while. A few saying, I've had to temporarily switch network, Dad or Mum. Can you text me on this WhatsApp number? And there begins the scam again as well. So as I say, we mention it from time to time. I know it's a bit boring and repetitive, but people are getting caught out by these scams every single day of the week. So please, please be careful. There's also an elaborate scam going about via email, which claims that you're being investigated for impropriety, often of a sexual nature. The idea is the shock and awe that you're so shocked and you want to completely disprove your guilt instantly. Please also be careful of them. They're quite well worded, but there are a few obvious signs that they are scams. So just a couple of things to keep in mind and keep our money at the hands of the criminals. Okay, sorry, I'm taken aback there. I heard Santi. Seems a bit early, but anyway. It's all good. A lot of people plan early. A lot of people plan early. I know some of them get their Christmas shopping done in the first couple of months of the year. Emma Murta, Program Manager at The Wheel. Hi, Emma. Good morning to you. Good to see you.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing good, Emma. What is At The Wheel?
Oh, so, well, I can give a quick explanation.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about the road shows coming up.
Yeah, brilliant. So our role, we are the National Association for Community, Charity and Social Enterprise Sector Organisations. So we provide all kinds of supports and advocacy on behalf of the sector. And one of the things that we're doing at the moment is we have a funding roadshow. So we've been running it for the last year. We've already been to Cork and Mayo and Sligo and Cavan and Monaghan. We're trying to get to every county in Ireland so that we can kind of come and meet local community charitable social enterprise groups where they are in their own communities. And talk to them about funding, which is obviously the big kind of pressing issues that a lot of organisations are facing.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of funding sources out there, you know, be it through the council or administered by the council on a national level. EU as well, peace funding, all this type of. But I've seen some of the paperwork involved, and dependent on the side of the organisation or how good you are at form filling and what have you, it can be somewhat overwhelming, and perhaps it doesn't need to be. I presume that's where an organisation like yours comes in.
Absolutely, yeah. So look, you know, what we're looking at is kind of the local, the national EU. So there should be something in there for everybody, regardless of your capacity and of your experience when it comes to funding. We'll also touch on things like community fundraising and contracts and trading, like social enterprises, businesses that are non-profit in nature, that generate their own income and reinvest it into the organisation. So we hopefully kind of touch on everything, but absolutely, like, a big part of the wheel, a big part of what we do is kind of supporting organisations with that gap that's often there, you know, when it comes to how do I get started with funding? How do I build my skills?
Well, which is the best funding stream for me to apply to? Because you don't want to waste your time and resources either. So again, you can get some guidance in relation to that. Who's at the roadshow? Who do you bring with you other than the Wheel team?
Yeah, so there's a few of us. And then we are also, I suppose, very important to mention for this one is that we are, for the one in Donegal specifically, is we are partnering with Donegal County Council and the Western Development Commission, who've been really, really supportive, helping us kind of spread the word on the ground there. So they'll be there on the day, obviously, to talk a little bit about their supports and funding for the sector. But we also have kind of like a mini kind of expo of various funders. So we have things like Donegal Partnership, Donegal County Council, Community Finance Ireland and Clan Credo, who kind of provide social financing for the sector. And then a few of the different EU funding national contact points, which includes the likes of Lergus, the LIFE programme, the Environment and Climate programme, their national contact point, and the Interreg contact points in the Northern Western Regional Assembly.
Is it possible there are groups or organisations out there that possibly could qualify for funding, but they're not aware of it? And is it easy sort of to outline what they might be, just so someone listening involved in a group or what have you might go, oh, right, I didn't realise that perhaps we could, you know, they might have ambitious plans or modest plans, it doesn't matter. So how do you identify really, I suppose, if you are an organisation or a setup that actually can apply for funding?
Yeah, well, any community, voluntary, charity, social enterprise organisation.
What's a social enterprise, just so we're clear? Sorry, because I hear that often.
Yeah. So a social enterprise is essentially a business. It uses business models. It creates its own income. It trades, that kind of thing. But it kind of reinvests its profits into the organization, and it has social impact at its core. So an example of this would be the likes of charity shops or community cafes that provide inclusive employment, things like that. But they can be huge. You know, there's lots of social enterprises that are of, you know, massive scale, and, you know, everything from very small kind of community businesses right up to kind of large organizations. If you fall within that category, you are eligible to apply for funding, and you can build a funding plan for your organization. Not every funding stream will be for you. You know, some organizations, you know, like The Wheel, we're a charity, but we never fundraise from the public. That's just not something we do. Whereas for other organizations, that's vital to what they do.
Yeah.
Some organizations will be applicable, you know, they can apply to certain programs. Others, you know, it just doesn't suit them. So I suppose if you're in that position where you're trying to figure out, you have ideas, you have things you want to fund, you're doing work in your community or at national level or whatever it is, and you are interested in learning about the types of funding that are out there, what's for you, what might not be for you, you know, all of that, it's definitely worth coming along.
I get you. Have you found in your previous events down the country that, you know, there's a useful networking element to this too, because you're getting a lot of different organisations under the roof, and even in a, you know, a relatively small community, often you don't necessarily know, you know, what everybody else is doing or how they're doing it for that matter.
Absolutely. I mean, half of it, I think, is that kind of solidarity, that realization that, like, okay, we're not in it on our own. There's other people also facing kind of similar challenges, or, like, vitally, you know, there's a community a couple of towns over that is kind of trying to do a similar thing here. Why don't we group up? And, you know, there's more kind of strength in numbers. Mm-hmm. We will really be emphasizing the kind of networking piece, whether that's networking with the funders. You will also have kind of opportunities to network and to meet directly with funders and ask questions, but also very importantly with the other community voluntary representatives in the room that are kind of operating in your area and facing similar situations.
Okay, well, the event is on Wednesday. It's in Letterkenny. I haven't been told whereabouts in Letterkenny, but you can do that for me.
It's the Central Library in Letterkenny. It starts at 9:30 for registration and tea and coffee, and we kick off at 10 a.m. If you can't make the Donegal one in Letterkenny, there is we are doing one in Leitrim in Carrick and Shannon as well on the Tuesday, so the day before on the 3rd of October. Mm-hmm. It's not too far for people in Donegal.
Yeah, but maybe if you're down in Ballyshannon, Bundoran, Killybegs, it might suit you to nip to Carrick on Shannon tomorrow. Rather than Letterkenny on Wednesday. Now, it is free, but there are obviously limits to places and therefore pre-registration is required.
Yeah, it would be great if people could register. It does help us out a lot, even things like catering and all that. But look, you know, we want to try and have it as inclusive as possible for everybody. So please do engage. Please do show up, even if you can't stay for the whole thing. You know, we'd love to see you there, and hopefully you get something useful from it.
All right. What's the website, please, Emma?
So it's wheel.ie/events. Or you just go to wheel.ie, you should be able to find it from there. And if you scroll through, you'll see the funding road shows there, one in Carrick and Shannon and one in Letterkenny.
Good stuff. Thanks for your time. Have a lovely day. Take care. Emma Murta there, Programme Manager at The Wheel. Hopefully, if you're an organisation, a group out there, you heard outlined. There's a lot of funding, be it local, national, EU funding, cross-border funding and all that kind of stuff. It might help your organisation grow or help in the work that you're doing. So hopefully at least one person goes, ooh, might go to that, and it works out well for them. Hi, Greg. Just in relation to the text you read earlier about the NTPF and you were advising them to check everything with operation codes, etc. The NTPF is different to the cross-border scheme. It's completely free and you don't need to apply for it or submit any paperwork or receipts. The NTPF is to deal with people who have been on waiting lists here for a long time and they're sent to the north to get the treatment or to private hospitals in the Republic. Again, thank you very much. Wee bit rusty after the weekend today. I don't normally mix things up, but I have today. I've used the NTPF myself. Well, I haven't. My son did. And it was to Galway Private Hospital. What was it again? Gromitz, I think it was. So you're perfectly correct. The National Treatment Purchase Fund and the Cross-Border Fund or International Fund, yes, different. Thanks so much for that. I really appreciate it. Greg, if you get surgery in Northern Ireland, you must produce a receipt for something you purchased in a shop near the hospital where you had the surgery to prove you were there. And that's that is one of the things they're looking to eliminate as well, because that's crazy. And that's why people go on Facebook and say, were you in Derry on the 2nd of April and did you buy something in such a shop? I need your receipt. Even as I was outlining that scenario to Ger, he was shaking his head in disbelief. But apparently that's being worked on now. Greg, I went to Knightsbridge twice for scans. Didn't have to pay a penny. Good. That's good. That means it's working. Let me see. Where are we here? Right. Shall I take that break now or should continue with these comments? Greg, could you please mention the closure of Maui in Fanad, as I did not hear a whisper from any of the politicians. As a matter of fact, there's been no jobs created from Gordhawk, Falkara, Creasler, Carrigart, Milford, Kerrykeel, Fanad, Glenvar, Rathmullen, Remelton. With this size of a population, it would be no harm to say these people have been discriminated against for years while the government was squandering money and still doing it. We have nothing but yes men, says a listener. We covered that at the time where they were pretty much confirmed, and then we covered it again on Friday. At the time when they were confirmed, I think we certainly spoke, well, I don't want to list names in case I get it wrong, but definitely a couple of local representatives in that area and journalists based in that area as well when they were first announced and then subsequently came to effect. The government policy of mass immigration is designed to depress the wages of the Irish population. The policy of mass immigration is not something the Irish people have never openly discussed or asked for, yet we have it in place nonetheless. A referendum is essential. I mean, you might argue a reference, and many people do, to mass immigration. We have 100% employment here and a lot of people on very good wages. And if you look at some of the statistics, a lot of people getting pay rises and expecting pay rises as well. Right, I want to read some of these that were carried over from Friday because they're of a nature that people might think that I avoided reading them at all. No, he's not, Caroline. There's nobody waiting. I was at a meeting last week. I was talking to Ukrainians. They told me once the benefits run out, they're away home and they're living like kings here, and also said the war, not that bad. It's the worst bits you see in the news, so wake up. I'm not saying you're not telling the truth, but that's not my experience of speaking to people. But anyway, listen, keep loading people into Ireland's lifeboat. It'll sink money for that, but not for Micah, says another listener. Aintu at 6% in Ulster Connacht, 5% behind Fianna Fáil, despite the media blackout that's bound to have an effect on bigger parties' elections aspirations. And do you know, funny, I was doing the papers one of the days last week, and I noted that the paper was grouping Aintu in with independents and others. And I was surprised by that, because the Greens and Labour are always talked of as different. But I think, if I read correctly, Paddy Tobin, the leader of Aintu, took this up with RTE, and he said in a tweet that Aintu is not recognised by RTE as a political party, which I was really quite surprised at. Because as I'd noted last week, I couldn't understand why they were grouped in with others. Now, they're still a small party, but gaining traction, I just didn't understand why they were categorised as they were. Not that I have any, of course, I think people know I have no affiliations with any party whatsoever. But anyway, I just thought it a little bit strange. I now hate Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Greens with a passion, but I'm living in dread of Sinn Féin. Okay. We were never given the option of a vote or referendum about mass immigration. It has been imposed upon us. The Irish are set to become a minority in our own country in the decades to come. But who are the Irish? You vote in elections and you vote people in and their mandates, and you can see what parties stand for now ahead of council and national elections. So it's not a referendum as such, but you elect people based on their policies. And you give them a mandate to do, and you might say, well, I didn't give them a mandate for that. But, you know, if you are concerned in that regard, if someone's knocking at your door looking, vote, say, well, what's your opinion on this, that or the other? And you vote accordingly. That's how democracy works. But if you look at the percentages of people who are not Irish national or coming in, yes, the numbers are big, yes, they're putting pressure on, but as for of the overall percentage of the population, it's still, you know, in low single digits. But there are a lot of people that have lived here for a long time that make up around about 20% of the Irish population being non-Irish. Many of those are English that have moved over here as well or moved back here. So just look at the stats yourself and see what the story is. Up to 30,000 people on their third or subsequent learner permits have never sat a driving test. And in fairness, this is a story that is recycled more than we do plastic and glass in this country. But be that as it may, it's back in the headlines. Shane O'Donoghue, editor of CompleteCar.ie. Shane, I'd be interested in to find out how many of these are actually driving, you know, because to have people who've never been tested out on the road, although there are some of those of a certain generation. But anyway, it's not good, is it? It's not good for safety.
No, it really isn't. And there's no doubt, because of the length of time we're talking about, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and you just know they're not carrying L plates. And you just know they're not making sure they're accompanied all the time. It's just not happening. No way, not to that level. So absolutely, it means we have tens of thousands of people that have never sat a driving test that are sharing the roads with us. And that's not a good situation.
But it's one that's easily resolved, because rather than proof of booking a test, proof of sitting a test should be required to renew your permit.
I do not understand why that is not in place already. Apparently, the RSA had a commitment to changing that by 2014 and they missed it. And then they recommitted to changing that by 2016 and they missed it. And now apparently there isn't a target to change that. And I really don't understand why. I think it'd be really interesting to get somebody from the RSA, the Department of Transport, on and ask why. I mean, is there a political reason or a logistical reason why that loophole can't be closed? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think the road traffic legislation is just a basket case, as is. It needs to be chucked out and redrawn up, I think, because this is why it seems to be a struggle to change anything, especially common sense stuff like this.
Yeah, you're right. There's plenty of other items we've discussed on here already. that just seem, why is it that way at all? And as you say, it seems to take forever to make any little change. And I can't see why this change couldn't be made. As you say, make sure that you need to have proof of having sat your test before you're allowed to renew your learner permit. But of course, there will be a situation where there's an overlap in timings in terms of a learner permit expiring and your test coming up. And obviously there are still some delays in getting tests around the country, which people will cry foul about. But I don't think that's what we're talking about here. We're talking
about the numbers aren't such that people go, well, I can't get... And a lot of them are historic as well. So, yes, definitely, there are people on learner permits that chance it and shouldn't because their younger drivers maybe have to get to work or whatever it might be. But we're not talking about that. That is a problem, and they need to sort of, you know, hire more testers and get that sorted. What we're talking about here, though, is people of a certain vintage who are deliberately... working the system, and it's not for ID purposes. Probably it is because they're battering away at it now, and they know if they're of a certain age and they're stopped at a checkpoint, they're probably not going to be asked to produce their license.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This is a different situation to the backlog in driving tests. I mean, I don't know what you do. You effectively have to force it through. You know, because these people will have to also do the EDT, the essential driver training. Which they probably have never done. Certainly the people who've had learner permits for 20, 30 years, they won't have done that. And they should be made do that or something similar at least. It doesn't feel like it's outside the bounds of reality that you could change the system to fix it. It just feels ludicrous that it hasn't been fixed already.
I see the British government are pushing out to 2035 the phasing out of the sale of petrol and diesel cars here. Seems to be a European pushback in relation to that. We have crazy targets to reach in Ireland, which we simply won't. Do you see any change in our targets coming down the line here, Shane, in the Republic?
I think we'll be fully aligned with Europe eventually. So 2035, I believe, will realistically be the target. But all the car makers, you know, the model cycle or planning, development, all that is in the order of 10 years. It's not like, you know, you can suddenly say, oh, great, we've another 5 years. That's not how the car industry works at all. They're planning 10 years ahead. So the car industry are already planning for those timelines. But of course, the fact of the matter is the car manufacturers aren't just pandering to the European market. So there are global markets that have no intention or no targets yet for going fully electric. So there will be petrol and diesel cars manufactured around the world for quite a long time, beyond 2035. So I don't see Ireland changing beyond 2035 because that will align with Europe. And the car manufacturers that are selling cars in Europe are very much focus on that target. I don't believe any of them, other than the very, very small manufacturers perhaps, I don't believe any of the mass manufacturers are pushing to reduce those targets or to change those targets. They seem to be on board with those targets now.
Yeah, well, they can, for the most part, maintain their business practice, their market share. It doesn't really matter whether it's an ICE engine or an electric engine to them, I suppose. Okay, great stuff, Shane, as always. Thank you very much for your time. Have a lovely day. That is Shane O'Donoghue, editor of CompleteCar.ie. Check out their website if you wish. 086 60 25,000. Your WhatsApps and texts are coming into that number. Right, okay. I have a couple of long emails here, which I'm going to get to in a moment, but I just want to catch up on some of the comments from Friday. Greg, I'm sitting here in tears today. My problem is AIB is due to take out their quarterly fees, and when I look at my statement online, it says €64. If they take that, I have no money for my rent, which comes out on Monday, and nobody can tell me where my quarterly fees are. Right, okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Buses here. We were talking about there being no bus service. There is a bus service, but Bus Éireann don't have a service as such to get you to Galway early for a hospital appointment or whatever it might be, and back at a reasonable time. Michael McClafferty, councillor, says the system of pre-booking tickets is leading to senior citizens being left at bus stops while younger people who have pre-bought the tickets online take the places. The system's not working, as a lot of people in Donegal either don't have internet or can't book tickets in advance online. There needs to be a discussion around the bus service as a whole and the amount of buses that are servicing each area of Donegal. If buses are filling up like this and people are being left behind, we need to ask questions as to why there are not more drivers being employed. Suggestions that we should bring on county councillors from different areas of the county so that people know they're being heard and to put pressure on bus companies to sort out the issue. Yeah, indeed. We had an inquiry from a listener that we promised we'd get in touch with the HSE on, so I want to read that out. This was sitting with me for a couple of days, my apologies. And the message was, my father has a home care package but has no workers. Because of his dementia, he needs the bed to be changed. While doing that, he had to go to respite care. Then when it was time for him to return a week later, there was no workers to provide home care package. He needs hoisted up. It's just impossible to do it without support. This has been going on since August and we just keep getting told there is no staff. How is this acceptable? So this is a family whose father needs home care, hoists and what have you. They're being told none available. So we contacted the HSE with the permission of the listener, and it reads as follows. The Home Support Department in the area is aware of this case. However, the HSE does not comment on individual cases. Demand for home support continues to increase due to population growth and the increasing dependency of the growing numbers of people aged over 80 within the over 65s cohort. Waiting lists for home support have become a feature of the service now, primarily associated with an increasing capacity issue relating to the availability of care staff. In terms of those waiting, priorities given to people in the community with acute needs and to those assessed and waiting in acute hospital who are in a position to return home with supports. Funding approval for home support for those assessed as required, same, is expedited across the system to ensure minimum waiting times. The overall home support resource and the range of providers, including HSE directly employed staff, is carefully managed by the local home support management team with Community Healthcare Cavan, Donegal, Leitrim, Monaghan, Sligo to ensure that the key service is available at the required time in a flexible way and at the appropriate standard to support clients' assessed needs. Significant work is also underway to address the challenges associated with capacity issues and care availability, they say they're advertising. So it's long-winded, I understand, but out of respect to the person who responded to us, I had to read that. There's no... Well, listen, hopefully now the HSE are aware of your case and they're aware that you're contacting the likes of us. Hopefully that will help to resolve the situation. But they say they're struggling to recruit staff. They're dealing with trying to get people out of hospital into home support, those with most acute needs. It's identifying and recognising the problems. They're obviously looking for solutions, but it's clear that it's the same in health as it is in OTs, speech therapists, teaching and other areas. They simply can't get the staff